And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, it is time. Inching ever closer to the wild. You know what I see on social media all the time here, Steve?
What?
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live here on a Thursday as we are a little over 48 hours away from primetime playoff football on Super Wild Card Weekend.
I'll say, and I don't want to cut you off, but I'm so all about playing on Saturday.
Yeah, you don't think you would have made it to Sunday?
I'd have made it, but man, now you got Sunday to like just relax and belly up and just flop and watch
another game
football.
Monday night.
Yeah, I mean it's, you know, two games on Sunday. It's so not. I'm all about it. It's going to be an awesome weekend. Hopefully, I mean, you know, we'll have to put everybody on suicide watch if this game doesn't go well. But I just love the fact that usually it is the AFC. Games
Wait, it's three games on Sunday, isn't it? Two Saturday,
yes,
three Sunday,
correct.
One Monday.
That's correct. It's a 1, 4, and 8 on
I
Sunday.
A
I think
timer,
like
yeah.
They're all standalone games.
Uh-huh.
So the numbers they pull are going to be monster. But I think it's just I'm just all about playing on Saturday. I almost wish the Bills had that first game.
You do.
I kind of do. Just because you know it's a late night, man. It's a late night for all of us.
Hey,
and it, you know,
part of the deal, man.
But there's, you know, Sunday morning you can
sleep in,
arise at your leisure,
sleep in, have a big pancake breakfast, whatever you have,
and then get
there.
Right back on the couch.
Strap in. I am making chili this weekend. That is a given.
I think that's a go-to for me too. I might have to do that too. But
I always make it for the Super Bowl.
I don't know
but
if I want.
I am starting early. This
I don't know if I want
season.
To expend the energy to get up, make chili.
I'm running to the store after work today to get what I need.
Yeah,
it is happening.
Yeah,
so I am looking forward to that. What I was going to say is what I see on social media the last day or so. Bills fans are just—they're pacing already. They can't wait.
Yeah,
and I was reminded of the fact, and it's been—you know—it's been said by Coach McDermott, and even some of the players. Last year, there was only 6,800 in there for the home playoff games.
Right.
And for the first time since 1996, Bills versus Jaguars playoff game, you're going to have the building full.
I was playing in that stupid game.
Yeah, you were.
A whole generation of Bills fans, this is their first home playoff game. You had the
in person.
You had the 6,500 last year, and they were and they did it up.
I think it was 68. I want to say. I don't know why, but
I think it was like 10%.
Yeah.
So it probably was 68. And I'm telling you what, it's awesome. I hadn't thought about it because I was doing the radio with Murph last year, so I was at all those games, and you kind of forget nobody else got to see him in person.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
It really is amazing, and. It's going to be a fun day. It's cold. It's a late-in-the-day game. People can show up early and tailgate and all of that. So, it's going to be quite the day. Quite the day.
Right. And what's good for the Bills is their roster is arguably the healthiest it has been all season long. Coach McDermott, in addressing the media today, basically indicated that, you know, barring a late-in-the-week practice injury, he's going to have everybody available to choose from in terms of who's up for this game on Saturday night.
Right.
F.A. Obata and Emmanuel Sanders missed last week's games with knee and ankle injuries, respectively, but they're full go in practice today. They're going to have the whole lot. They're going to have everybody. And meanwhile, the situation is much different in New England. A lot of key players are question marks going into the game. Now, I think most of us would assume this is a playoff game. You know, they're going to, you know, if they're anywhere from 51% to 100% healthy, they're going to play.
Right.
But Dante Hightower was held out of last week's game against the Dolphins in the hopes that he would be healthy enough to play this week. Kyle Duggar, their safety, who is the primary coverage guy for tight ends, missed last week's game with a hand injury. And then you have, you know, their corners who are on the COVID list, Jalen Mills and a couple of others. But Jalen Mills is a starter.
Right.
They got a couple other DBs Mills on the COVID list, and then a few more on the injury list.
There's a couple of guys, and that could get all those injured guys back. Jalen Mills could test out on Saturday the COVID, but, you know, he's not practicing.
It's not a lock. And he's not on the practice field at all.
They do everything virtual anyway, as probably most people know the Bills are doing that as well.
Yep.
And so they're kind of used to doing it. It's not as big a gap as it would be normally, or at least it's a big gap, but it's not as big in difference to the other teams who are also doing it that way. So, yeah, the Patriots aren't losing that much ground except for the fact the guy's not on the field when they actually take snaps.
Yeah.
Plus, he's a veteran. He's, you know, there's that going on too. So, you know, he's not going to have to relearn anything before he comes on. So I'm fully confident that Patriots will be able to field all their best guys now. And how sharp those guys are remains to be seen. I know this, you sometimes get, I've seen this happen a couple of different times as a team. I'll give you an example. It happened to me in high school the exact same way, and it happened to me as a pro, or to the Bills since I've been covering pro football. In 2015, when the Bills had the snow game that got moved to Monday night in Detroit against the Jets. You remember that? I remember that the Jets, the Bills couldn't get to work. They couldn't practice. They had every reason in the world to have that game, you know, go away from them. The Jets were practicing. They were doing exactly the same thing the Bills were, except they were practicing. The Bills couldn't even get to the facility. And I thought when we got to Detroit, I was the sideline reporter for CBS. I called it, Brownie. I said, the Bills are going to lump these guys up. This was Rex and those guys.
Yeah.
And they did.
I was marooned in Detroit for 4 days with the team.
Right. So, yeah, they kind of got to Detroit.
We left on Thursday
morning. Right.
And they practiced Thursday night at like 5 p.m.
Right. So I knew.
For their first practice of the week.
I called it. I said, the Bills are going to roll these guys. And they did. They rolled up on them. And the reason is that you play with so many built-in excuses and no expectations by your fans, by your coaches, by the media, by your opponent, it's so easy to play wild, loose, and free that it's hard to beat a team like that. And it puts them in a mindset. Now, the reason I say this is because you got some guys on the Patriots, they got all kinds of excuses. They're injured. They got all this going on. They weren't practicing. They're going to get a chance to play. They're going to feel good. They're going to feel fresh. And so you're going to get a good effort from those guys who have been injured or whatever on and off the field. And plus, you know, I've always said it, wild card weekend brings something out in every team. Wild card weekend's something else because you grind out that long season, and some of these teams bite and claw and scratch to get in. Bills and Patriots didn't. But now it's what you've been working for all season, and you get the extra effort for that. These guys are really tuned in and sharp because of it. So I think Wild Card Weekend has some of the best football around, although with the 7-team feel, it's a little different than it has been in the past. I still think Wild Card Weekend is something special.
Yeah.
And I think players play like that.
The two players who did not practice for the Patriots yesterday, Jamie Collins, the linebacker with an ankle injury, and left tackle Isaiah Wynn. He was listed as a limited participant. That was a practice estimation for Tuesday, and then yesterday did not practice at all. He has missed two starts earlier this season. He missed a week 5 start at Houston and a week 6 start against Dallas. And the Patriots went 1-1 in those games. The guy who replaced him in the lineup was Justin Heron, the team's third tackle on the roster. So he came in and spelled him at left tackle. So we would anticipate they would do that again if for some reason Isaiah Wynn could not go. He had a hip injury already and then suffered an ankle injury in the Dolphins game last Sunday. So he may or may not be available for New England come Saturday night, especially on a short week. And then we saw late last night the reports coming out that interviews had been scheduled for both Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll and defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier with the Dolphins on the same day. They were both scheduled to interview Sunday. We have since seen updated reports that say Leslie Frazier will interview sometime early next week. So it looks like Dable will be headed down there on Sunday. Frazier, presumably Monday. I mean, I don't know. I'm just guessing here. Monday, maybe Tuesday, as the Dolphins begin their head coaching interviews for their vacancy after firing Brian Flores.
I don't want to get out in the weeds too much on with all these coaching changes and stuff. The Giants have fired Joe Judge, all that. They got all this stuff going on. And which jobs seem to be attractive? And it's interesting to think about that.
Well, I'm just going to say this. If I am Brian Dable or Leslie Frazier, and I'm given the opportunity to be the head coach of the Dolphins, yes, it's one of just 32 jobs in the league. They've got a good defense, some nice young talent on that roster. But Tua is at the center of the decision-making as far as I see it. And if you're not overly enthused about Tua Tagovailoa, do you really expect him? You're going to have to deal with the guys you just left twice a year, Josh Allen and that team? You're going to have to deal with that twice a year?
Let me say this.
I don't know if I want that.
I don't know anything about the relationships or the guys we're talking about, except I'm very well acquainted with Brian Dable. If Dable doesn't get the Miami job, it is because
he doesn't want it. Yeah.
Because if he goes in there and says, listen, I worked with Tua when he was a freshman.
I think that's part of the reason
I won a national championship with Tua.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason they're interested in him in the first place.
If he goes down there and says,
thanks, but no thanks.
Appreciate the opportunity, but no.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm the right guy. That's what you say. You say I'm not the right guy because
of A, B, and C.
You can't say, you know,
I don't want it.
I don't want your job. You can't say that
publicly. That gets around.
But that'll get around anyway, but you can't make them look bad.
Right.
You can't make that team look bad. And if Dayball is the guy that goes down there and interviews, because also think about it. Not only is he working with Tua, if he doesn't want to work with Tua, he also has to be in the same division with the guy he's leaving.
That's what I'm saying.
And the guy that they're playing this weekend. Bill Belichick and Josh Allen and Sean McDermott in the same division with Tua.
Yeah.
And the owner who has got some question marks about his track record.
Well, it's a bad track record.
Right. I'm going to wait until an AFC South job opens up.
So I can play Jacksonville and Houston.
I'm going to go to Jacksonville next weekend and take that job. Right?
I guess, yeah. The AFC South would be a better division to go to because is there a true franchise quarterback in that division right now? There isn't.
Not unless it's
Trevor.
Trevor's
the closest thing to
it. It's not Carson Wentz. Carson may not be there next year.
And Deshaun Watson's probably not going to be there either.
And Tannehill is he's not great, but
I'm not a fan of his.
But think about it though. He's got to be 30 something?
I think he's 30.
He's more than 30.
Is he?
Oh yeah.
I'll look it up. I'll see how old he is.
All right,
I want to say he's 30,
guessing,
but
I'm
in any
he's
event,
two at least.
But the AFC
forever.
South.
Anyway,
if you can go to Jacksonville, that's the closest thing to a future franchise quarterback,
and it's
a more attractive job
in Jacksonville.
Oh wow, you're right. He's 33.
I think the word is, it's not about the quarterback down there. It's about the ownership relationship. What kind of support are you going to give me? Here's what I would like from you. For instance, Sean McDermott comes here, and a year after he takes over, Kim and Terry drop a chunk of cash down. Now they got a facility that is second to none, and they can draw people in. They take care of their players. Word gets around how they treat these guys. If somebody goes down there and interviews for Jacksonville and they ask for that kind of support, that kind of financial backing, what's Shad Khan? How does he handle that question? Does he say yes, or he says, well, how about this instead, or whatever, whatever? Those questions, in Jacksonville, that's the question. In Miami, it's that and the quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot going on in both
those
spots.
It may be a moot point anyway. Do you think there was some foresight when they thought about throwing Brian Flores overboard as to how attractive their job would be? If this head coach, because I believe there's a part of me that believes Brian Flores made it plain to them that he doesn't feel they can win big with Tua at quarterback. They feel differently, and because of those irreconcilable differences, they parted ways. Now, officially it comes out Brian Flores has been fired, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the main dynamic at work there. But if you're the Dolphins and you have the coach that's seen him for the better part of the last 2 years and he says, we can't win big with this guy, and you throw him overboard, are you convinced you're going to be able to find a guy that does believe in him? Like, that, I think that's something you have to at least run through your mind. And I get it. Again, it's one of 32 jobs. Someone will take it. David Culley took the Texans job in basically stepped into a tire fire and said, I'll take
the
job.
So did Dan Campbell.
Right.
And those guys, while they're good coaches, longtime NFL coaches, that gives you the idea of guys who have removed themselves from that conversation.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, when now those guys get the job,
maybe you may be able to tell me that the Detroit Lions and the Houston Texans did not offer the job to anybody but their guy.
Leslie Frazier was a finalist for the Houston job last year and didn't get it or didn't take it.
Right. Right. There could be that. I suspect
we don't
that
know that.
I suspect that dynamic.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I haven't talked
either.
To Leslie about it. I wouldn't know. But that, and I think that's the way at the upper echelons of the executive branch of the NFL, when you get up to the head coaching ranks, that's how they handle that stuff.
Yeah.
You just quietly remove your name, and they offer it to somebody else. And I think Detroit goes through that. I think Minnesota might go through that. I think certainly the Bears are going to go through that. I mean, Houston's got a problem.
Well, they got a long build.
Yeah.
They got a long build. And I think part of the reason why, because people are like, oh, is David Culley going to survive?
Yeah,
I think they have to think long and hard, like, who might actually take this job?
You might stick with him.
Yeah. They showed some grit at the end of the season.
David Culley can coach now. I mean, he may not have the household name, but
he's got a veteran staff.
He knows people and got some guys, and he's been around a lot of staffs, and he knows how to, coach a team. He's not a sexy hire, no. But man, oh man, when you're in the shape that the Houston Texans were in,
consider yourself fortunate.
Yeah, I think so. I think you do. Yeah. I think you do. But these jobs that are available, and there's six of them now, seven?
Seven now.
Seven with the Giants.
Yeah.
The Giants.
Even
both owners acknowledge that they're just, pushing the plunger down. It's going to explode. They're like the Wile E. Coyote.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to, let's just scorch earth and go again.
Speaking of frank comments, Chris Ballard, GM of the Indianapolis Colts, was very candid today in his season wrap-up press conference with the Indianapolis media and was essentially offering up additional comment to questions that didn't necessarily prompt him to say certain things. Chris Ballard, when asked about Carson Wentz and the decision to acquire him, said, quote, "At the time, we felt it was the right decision. I'm not going to make a comment on who is going to be here next year and who is not." Now, I am not at the press conference. I don't know the context. I don't know if a follow-up was asked. But if that's coming unsolicited, that decision's already been made. If you got a GM saying that, I'm not going to comment on who's going to be here next year and who is not at the tail end of his comments about acquiring Carson Wentz, he's gone already.
And I say it's I think that's just, that might be taken a little bit out of context because
I wasn't there. But
he was continuing a conversation that had been started with the postseason remarks of Frank Reich, who they asked him point blank about his Carson Wentz, how about doing this? And Frank really actually deflected it.
Yeah.
He didn't say, yeah, Carson's my guy. Now last year, and he was called on it by people who commented on how it was. Last year, he said, yes, I want Phillip Rivers to come back as my quarterback. I liked him. He's still got some football in him, da-da-da-da-da. Uh-huh. He did not say that about Carson this time. What he did was he just said, listen, I'm not going to evaluate any individual player in public.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great move, but
Ballard did say there were some good and some bad from Wentz this past year, and he said he spoke to Wentz yesterday, and in terms of some of the things he said to him was, make the layups, make the layups, make the layups. There were too many easy plays within the scope of that offense that he did not make for them this year.
That's right.
He was woefully inconsistent.
See, people are still saying that, and I heard a good friend of mine, Kurt Warner, he and I talk occasionally, and he said the same thing when he was asked by another entity about, you know, Josh Allen evaluating. He says, you know, Josh, the big next step for Josh is taking the easy ones all the time and hitting them all the time. Make the layups. It's so hard to dissect what a defense is doing. And we've seen it at times. We've all seen it. Think about the first New England game or the second New England game back in Foxborough where Josh was dinking it the entire game. And then, you know, and they end up moving every single drive they have inside the Patriot 20-yard line. And they go three for four in the red zone. Just taking what they give you. It's hard. Apparently, it's harder than it seems for quarterbacks to do that because it takes so much work to get back there and so much work to put in a game plan and stuff. You don't want to just settle for taking those easy ones, apparently. But that's what's been said about Josh as well. And certainly Carson Wentz is in the exact same boat. I mean, you've got to take plays that are there because the others are so hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And you become hard to defend. Really hard to defend.
Yes, you do. We have an update from Patriots practice today. Isaiah Wynn, the left tackle, not seen at practice during the media viewing portion again today. And safety Kyle Duggar with the hand injury, who missed last week's game, not out at practice today either. Jamie Collins, who missed yesterday's practice with an ankle injury, was seen out there by the media who was on hand watching practice. So that's your update from New England's practice field. We'll see what their Thursday injury report looks like later today, probably around 4:05. I'll be sure to tweet it out when it gets passed out there and is released. We're going to have a little fun with you here today as Bills fans because we're basically asking you, following Saturday night's Bills-Pats wild card playoff game, what's your Sunday morning headline for the paper? Give it to us. Get as clever as you want. Just keep it clean, and we'll be happy. We'll be happy to read them off, or you can call us at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
If it's not clean, you're not going to see it. So,
well, yeah, that's the risk you run. So 803-0550, the number to get on board. And we are going to go to the phones now, and we're going to lead off with Trey in Vermont. What do you have for us, Trey? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. First of all, great show. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Greetings from way up north in Vermont, up here in Coventry, Vermont, where it's pretty chilly. But I just wanted to talk about the weather and the crowd and all these available seats it's looking like on the secondary markets. Looking at the temperature, the predicted, I think the mercury reading says about 7 below. And I know a lot of people can't cross the border and a lot of people are down with disease and things like that. But the fact that there's so many people trying to sell their tickets and not, on secondary markets, to me, it's kind of a little bit embarrassing. I mean, sure, it's Buffalo. We live in a cold weather town, but there's a ton of tickets on the secondary markets. And I think this morning I heard there's, 2,001 tickets or something like that at the actual box office.
Down to 500, though. Down to 500 this morning, last I heard.
Okay, but I mean, what's the use of having a bigger stadium if we can't even sell out a home playoff game?
They're not building a bigger stadium.
No, it won't be bigger. The newer one. Well, in terms of seating,
it'll probably be smaller. It'll probably be smaller.
Yeah, but I mean, we can't even sell out a home playoff game.
Well, I think the tickets are sold. With the exception of the 500 that are sitting out there right now. I mean, all but 500 of, what are we talking about, 69 and change are sold. So, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. But, you know, at the same time, I think weather is a factor. And people are thinking long and hard about sitting out in that weather. I think if it was a day game, it's not even an issue. I think the whole prospect of going to a January playoff game here when the sun is out makes a world of difference to a lot of people.
Yeah, with the weather as bad as it's going to be, that's what's going to happen with any NFL team putting on a game on a weekend like this with an outdoor stadium. Green Bay, Buffalo, New England, MetLife,
Chicago, anywhere.
You name it. That's what it's going to be in any market,
yeah,
not
Denver.
Just Buffalo.
I mean,
yeah, Denver.
Plus, you're at altitude. You know,
yeah, if the weather is going to be brutally cold, and they know it's going to be, it's always an issue like this for every stadium. So, and I get it. It looks bad for the team, and you can insult the fan base if you want. I would put this fan base up against anybody's.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Paul on Grand Island. What do you got for us, Paul? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, Steve, I've got a question for you. Let's say it's late in the game. It's, 0 degrees, and you come up to kicking a field goal that normally would be a gimme, but you're wondering, that ball so hard, are you going to be able to kick it? Would it be possible for the coach to tell Bass, look, you go ahead and make the kick. I'm going to call timeout just before you kick it. Have him go and talk to the ref. So if he makes it, kick it again. If it looks like that ball's too hard and it ain't going to work, go for it on fourth down. Can you use your timeout to advantage just the way that the defense would use that timeout to ice your kicker?
That's an interesting strategy.
You can ice your own kicker if you want, but there's no guarantee the second one will go through.
Yeah.
But yes, you could. Yes, you could do that. And you're right, too, Paul. You only do that if you tell your kicker you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually, I tell you this, if you have conversations about it, if it's part of your repertoire, if you talk about it in practice all the way from training camp all the way through, and you tell your kicker, hey, we're going to do this, like that 40-mile-an-hour wind game. That might have been the time.
Kick it and let me know how it feels.
That might have been the time to actually do it. Give him two shots at the same kick. Call a timeout right before, take the practice kick, and then give it a shot. Now, I've said this a lot. If I was a special teams coach, if somebody ices the kicker and they snap the ball, there is no way my kick block team lets that guy kick the ball. You rush. Don't give him a free practice kick. That is an absolute no-no. So you go in, you rush it, you block it, you bump into him, you do anything you can. But if the play's dead, you do not let them get a free kick to try and practice it. So I get you, Paul. Give the guy a practice shot at it. But that has to be something you talk about in the lead up to the game, and you warn the kid coming in.
Yeah, and you're telling your long snapper, your holder,
your everybody, listen, we're going to try and take a practice kick here and then take the time out. So,
and then reassess.
Yeah. And you would only do – and I would say this. With the kicker you've got now and the coach you've got now, everybody in place in the same season and remembering the 40-mile-an-hour winds – you say, listen, if we get into a spot like that again, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to give you two shots at it if we have the timeout to spare. It's a good idea, Paul. But, man, oh, man, like I say, you got to have a long runway to make sure your kicker's okay with it, get all right with it, get your team ready for it, your long snapper ready for it. You don't spring that at the last minute.
No.
But I see your
it's an interesting strategy.
Reasoning. I see your reasoning. In Buffalo –
yeah,
that's a big yes at 40-mile-an-hour winds.
If the weather is the biggest factor impacting your kicker, it's an interesting strategy.
It is. Now, you would never, ever do that in a dome.
No, you wouldn't, because the weather's not impacting the kick.
Right. You don't do that anyplace else. But I get the idea. But that is such a, remote.
Right, but...
But
stranger,
then also, too, like if
things have happened instance, and been attempted.
If you're going to, I'll say this too, Paul, if you're going to do that, it's interesting because then you might say, okay, we're going to practice it. This is a little too long. Like this is in 40 mile an hour winds and it's a 42 yarder, not a 22 yarder.
Yeah.
We're going to give him a shot. We're going to let him practice it and see what he thinks. Because then we get a look at it. It's like 15 yards short and sideways. It's like, you know what? We took the timeout. We're going to send the offense back out.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I could see that. It might give you a chance to experiment with a more difficult kick if you're going to not let him kick it or call the timeout to check it out.
Yeah. And I know there might be some people out there that say, well, isn't that why you send the kickers out early before the second half and before the game to give you a line of demarcation as to what their limit is? Like, where's the line where they're good to kick? And where is the line where it's, this is too far, I'm not going to make it? That changes,
yeah.
From the beginning of the second half to the end of the game. I mean, it could change. It certainly could change here. Well, I mean, I remember when I was working in news, we used to have a tagline for weather every 10 minutes because Western New York weather can change in a minute. I mean, it can.
Yeah,
it can.
And
here.
Certainly, they do that at the beginning of the game, and certainly that doesn't hold true to the end of the game. Now they still have to reassess. So yeah. It's an interesting idea, and I'd never heard.
That's a good call, Paul.
I never heard about that, but for what we see, the kick that Bass missed in the 14-10 New England game
would have been a good practice kick.
Would have really been a nice scenario because he had the distance and he had it. He sent it down the middle
for the wind.
He did send it down the middle and it got blown hard right. So if you hit it just inside the left, that thing had a chance.
Right.
Or maybe just outside the left. And trust it's going to get blown back in.
I don't know if I want to do that, but well, I know what you're saying.
You got to, but at least you'd have another shot at it.
You'd have another shot.
So, interesting.
Yeah, good call, Paul. I like it. Others holding at 803-0550. Stay right where you are. We'll get to you when we come back. We have to take a break here, but your phone call is coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And asking you following Saturday's Bills-Pats playoff game, what's your Sunday morning headline? Get creative if you want. Or anything else on your mind at 803-0550. We go back to the phones now. And leading us off here is Tom in Cheektowaga. What do you got for us, Tom? You're on One Bills Live.
How you doing?
Good, good.
Well, I was listening to that Boston sports station last week, and, you know, they said if the Bills lose a big game, a lot of the fans will jump in a barrel and go over Niagara Falls, you know. But I don't think it's that bad. But I was at that Raiders playoff game years ago where they won 51-3.
Okay,
right. It was cold. But, you know, we had Reed and, you know, Lofton. We had Thurman Thomas. And, of course, we had Steve and Kelly playing. I'll tell you, we're a passing game. I don't mind going on the road because, you know, we don't have an O.J. Simpson or Thurman Thomas running. I granted, Singletary is great, but Allen does great on the road, and I don't worry about that. We get behind this, get through with this game, and no telling where we can go. But I hate to play. I'm sure you guys don't want to play in 0-degree temperature. You know, it's no fun.
Well, it's not ideal
for the fans either. But
yeah,
we'll see what happens. I wish they wish them good luck, and good luck to you, Steve. Okay, bye bye.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah,
The 51-3 game was not cold. It was a little cold. It wasn't that cold. It wasn't the Raiders in '94, January of '94 cold. That was cold. It was zero with minus like 26.
Wind chill.
It was cold.
Cold with a capital C.
Cold, yeah. It was beyond cold. It was, yeah, dangerous cold. And it was also a clear day, that 94 game against the Raiders.
Which always makes it colder.
Right.
Because when it's cloudy and overcast,
the heat rises and it's gone.
Yeah, there's no blank, because when you have a cloudy or an overcast day, and I'm not a meteorologist, nor do I pretend to be one on the radio or television.
You can pretend.
But when you have a cloud deck, it actually keeps the warmth that the sun does create closer to the Earth's surface. And it keeps the air temperature a little bit warmer. When you have a clear day, all of that escapes. It's not retained. And so it makes for colder weather. Obviously, Saturday's game is going to be cold because the sun's going to be down. That's not even going to be a factor.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be dark.
It'll be dark for almost 4 hours by the time they play
pitch
the game
dark.
And kick it off.
Yeah, it's going to be really – it was cold that day, too. And I'm telling you, the water on the sidelines was freezing in the cups. It was hard to stay hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
I remember running that kickback and thinking, man, oh, man, I got too many clothes on.
I'm not going to make it.
And you see even in the highlights, like Kenny Davis jumping over the pile, Carwell Gardner. None of those guys had sleeves on, though. They went sleeveless. Yeah. Because you can come off the field. Let's face it, the fans, bless their heart, they don't have it as good as the players do. The players are taken care of. We got heated benches. We got ponchos. We're running around. We're keeping warm. Fans are sitting still in the stands. They can jump up and down and clap, but that ain't like running around covering kicks or running routes.
Yeah.
It's cold for them. For the players, they got people working to keep them warm.
Yeah.
So they'll be all right. And you see in the highlights, there's a bunch of guys with, Bruce had no sleeves. It was nuts. Just nuts.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Judy in Buffalo. What you got for us, Judy?
I'm wondering if we lose Daboll and or Frazier, do we have enough coaching talent presently on the team so that we could promote from inside? Or would we have to go out in the market, too, and try to find some coaches?
Yeah, that's a good question, Judy. I would say this. John Butler, who is the secondary coach, has been a defensive coordinator prior to here. He was a defensive coordinator for one season in Houston. So there is somebody on staff that's done it on that side of the ball at the pro level. And on the offensive side of the ball, I don't believe there is anybody who has coordinator experience. A lot of people have mentioned Ken Dorsey as a possible successor to Brian Daboll. He is the quarterback's coach who has worked very closely with Josh also the last few years. So those would be, I would think, at least candidates that would qualify to promote from within. Whether they go and do that or look outside the organization, I think is something that's obviously up to Sean McDermott and what Brandon Bean decide.
Now, I don't think all these guys will be available, but you don't think if he wants to work that Brian Flores could coordinate or Vic Fangio could coordinate?
Right. And that's the outlier here. Yes, it's nice to promote from within, but you have someone like Fangio has his own style of defense.
Yes, you're right. I'm just saying as an example. It doesn't have to be Fangio exactly, but it could be a guy like Brian Flores. It could be other guys who move on or out there that have some chops behind them, So
I think that's more likely to happen on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive. I would tend to think that McDermott, for continuity's sake, would like to keep the scheme in place defensively, which he is very intimately familiar with. And
it's interesting, too, because you don't want to get all – I get they got this – for instance, say all our hopes and dreams come true.
I take it back. I believe Eric Washington, the defensive line coach, it just hit me in the head. He's been a defensive coordinator also. He was defensive coordinator in Carolina after Sean
left. Yeah.
So I believe he has coordinator experience as well.
Forgive
me for not remembering that off the top of my head.
For instance, we have this big kumbaya moment where the Bills win the Super Bowl and all this, and Daboll goes and coaches and Leslie Frazier goes and coaches. I think it might be a mistake to let the glow of that accomplishment say, we're good the way we are and we'll just take this guy. I think you need to continue to make Josh Allen, the offensive line, your coach, give them another voice in the, you just don't want to fill up with this yes, 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 we're all okay kind of mentality. You need somebody to push
change
back.
Change could be good is what you're saying.
Yeah, change could be good. It could refurbish what you're doing. And I think you need to have somebody come in there and pull something out of Josh, too. Let's take Josh to another level. Take Steph Diggs to another level. Ask some more of Cole Beasley and Gabriel Davis and these guys. Pull some stuff out of them. You need to continue to stoke the fire of growth And I think if you run the risk of, you know, all right, everybody's just going to click up one notch on the totem pole. You know, the assistant quarterback coach becomes the quarterback coach. The quarterback coach becomes the offensive coordinator. The assistant wide receiver coach becomes the wide receiver.
Mike Tomlin's changed his coordinator several times over through the course of Ben Roethlisberger's career.
That's right.
He's had a number of coordinators.
Oh, yeah. Right. I think that's a different story than what we're talking about.
Well, I'm just saying, here's a guy that's coached for a long time. It wasn't going anywhere, but wasn't afraid to make changes. And,
right.
You know what I mean? Bring in people from the outside.
I think you need to change what you do. I think you do need to refurbish. Not that I'm saying that if Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier don't get head coaching jobs, that you kick them to the curb. I don't want to do that.
No.
But I'm saying is if they
under
do go,
the assumption that
if they
get
do
a job.
Go, I don't think there's anything wrong with giving a long, hard look to bringing in a new perspective into your room.
All right, we got to take a break here. Walter on a cell, Dennis and Blaisdell, hang tight. We'll get to you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, jumping right back to the phones here on a Thursday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. If you want to have some fun today, hit us up on the tweet sheet with the following. After Saturday's Bills-Pats playoff game, what's your Sunday morning headline? But we go back to the phones, and we go to Walter on a cell. What do you have for us, Walter?
Hey, Brownie and Steve. I just want to talk about the stadium for the Bills. I'm tired. I'm sick of every single time I have to go and watch a football game, and it's gotta be windy, it's gotta be snowing out, and I'm just sick of it. Like, why can't I love Terry and Kim Pegula? Of course, they gave us the magic of Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, and they gave us Josh Allen, but I just want like a roof stadium because Allen plays his best game when he's throwing the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
I understand it because you're saying, oh, if there's no weather, you're not going to impact the passing game in any way, shape, or form. And you're not alone. I understand the sentiment, but I'm not going to pretend to know what the ins and outs of all the stadium negotiations are with respect to the renderings and the decisions that have been made and the costs involved. But all indications from what we've heard is that those kinds of decisions have already been locked in. You know, I don't see anything changing that, you know.
No, they did. You know, here's the thing too, and I think it has too. I'll say this. You know what I was thinking about how I'm trying to project myself into the future and be a guy who goes to games and do that, you know,
time traveler,
in the new stadium.
Okay.
If it were a dome stadium, and I this is my take on it, and I don't think it's going to change, and I'm going to say it from now until the stadium's built, I'm going to say this. If it's a dome, if it's an outdoor stadium, I think the environment is going to be much like it is today. It's going to be, you know, tailgates, breaking through tables, big tents, lots of fun, getting ready for the games and stuff, and we go into the game, watch the game.
Sure.
I think when you get a dome stadium, and this has been a personal observation of mine, and a feeling I get putting myself in the position of our fans here in Buffalo going to the game in a dome.
Gotcha.
Tailgating will cease to be.
Why?
Well, because when it's bad weather, you won't, because you just go in.
Right. You show up and go in.
Show up and go in.
Okay.
In good weather, it won't be a habit, so you have to get it going. And slowly but surely, over time, tailgating becomes less and less and less and less of a thing. Go to any of the dome stadiums in the country. There's no tailgating. And I get it.
They do tailgate in Houston, and they never open that roof. They tailgate there, unless it's too hot, and then they don't.
It's not the same. I mean, think about, like, of course it's different, but they can't in downtown Detroit. Nobody tailgates.
Right. There really isn't anywhere in New Orleans to do that, at least from what I can
I'm telling you, you will cease to see tailgates become a thing. Now, there'll be once in a while, one-offs, like where it's, okay, our company party's going to be outside the stadium for this game. But there will not be, lot after lot after lot after lot of tailgate after tailgate after tailgate after tailgate. All that will change drastically if you cover the stadium, because it's no longer an outdoor party all day.
Yeah.
Now it's an indoor party, and you just go to the indoor party.
I hear you. Okay.
It's what's going to happen.
It's an interesting theory.
You can say what you want about it, whether I'm right or wrong. It's unfathomable to me if anybody would disagree with me, but I'm telling you that my thought is nobody will tailgate anymore in Buffalo if you have a roof on that stadium.
Are you going to insert your Charles Barkley line here? I may not be right, but I'm not wrong.
I may not be right. I may be wrong, but I doubt it.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Dennis in Blaisdell is next. What do you got for us, Dennis?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Long-time listener, love your show.
Thank you.
I have one question, and then if I could, have two statements.
Sure.
With the game that Matt, the punter, had last week, do you think Belichick will spend time and hard rush the punter in our first punt of the game? Number two, he knows that there's only two ways to stop Josh Allen and company, and that's play bump and run, which you're taking a heck of a chance there, first 5 yards, or jump up and try to take away his passing lanes. Number three is a statement. Steve, the Football Hall of Fame is for the best of the best, and you were one of the best, and you should be in the Hall of Fame. No questions asked, because people in Buffalo know how hard you contributed with special teams, but when we needed a receiver, you were also there for us. You belong in the Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you, Dennis. I appreciate that, and thanks for the call. That's nice. I think you're right. I think there's no doubt that they are very familiar with the struggles that Matt Hawk had last week. And they will have a plan for that. Whether it comes early, I kind of doubt that it will be on the first punt, but it'll be at some point when they think they'll get a bigger advantage of it to it. And it will be something that they have not shown on film yet.
Right.
So they got to be ready for it. Secondly, you're right. The physicality of their DBs playing bump and run, as you call it, they'll do some of that, but they're also going to try and bat down the balls that Josh Allen's throwing as well. They'll do that all the time. Without exception, because if they can't get home, that's what a defensive lineman is supposed to do.
And the Jets put some of that on tape last week. They had about 2 or 3 batted passes.
Right. So there's going to be some of all of that you said, yes. So I would say, yeah, Matt Hawk had better work on his get-off times this week, and they better shore up their protection and make sure it's sound. And I think you're right. There's no question Bill Belichick knows Josh Allen's the key to this game for the Buffalo Bills. And their plan is going to center around making him uncomfortable, making it difficult for him to complete passes and get the ball out of the pocket. And it will be a mixture of everything they can think of to get an advantage by confusing him and by getting in on him quick.
Yeah. They want to push him into a bad decision.
That's right.
And get takeaways to get extra possessions for their offense. I think these coaches know in New England, man to man, they do not match up well enough. They are not as deep a team as the Bills. They are not as talented a team as the Bills. Defenses are pretty comparable, but offensively speaking, they do not have the same horses that the Bills do. It's as simple as that. So now it's on the Patriots coaching staff to find other places to get an advantage. This will be a very desperate New England team coming in here because they know they have to find other areas to exploit to try to level the playing field. And it may come on special teams. You have a guy that they're going to test. Hey, how mentally tough is this kid? Is he going to be able to bounce back from a bad week last week? Let's not give him the chance to. Let's go after his first punt.
Right.
And that might impact what Coach McDermott decides to do on fourth downs in this game.
Right.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of layers there to that. But I would expect a very, very desperate Patriots team because they know man-to-man, offense, defense, special teams, they do not level up to what the Bills can put out there.
Yeah, particularly in the offensive skill positions. I agree with you. I think they're spending long hours dissecting what's wrong or what's right with the Bills' special teams, particularly the punt team. And if they could, you know, and because they hope, let's think about it. He had a 28-yard punt last week that didn't count because they had offsetting penalties.
Yep.
They came back and kicked it again. He kicked a 21-yarder.
Mm-hmm.
Then he dropped a snap on a punt and
was a little
up,
off the mark, in fairness, but he should have caught it.
Yeah. So,
and he admitted as much.
Sure, sure. So you know the Patriots are going to, you know, think about it. Now, there's not much they can do because a lot of that is just the snapper and the kicker catching it and stuff. There's nothing the Patriots can do about that. But certainly it raises their antenna. And I like what you said. It may be just every single punt this week the Patriots are going to go all out to try and block.
Yeah, I mean, it could be any of that stuff. Any of it could be coming our way. We have to take a break here. But when we come back, NBC Sports Boston Patriots reporter Phil Perry joins us to give us the latest on the Pats heading into the wild card matchup. Phil Perry coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Whoever we play, you know, we're going to prepare accordingly and try to get a win.
However the cards may fall, we're excited for the next opportunity. It's a brand new season now. Brand new season. Looking forward to the opportunity, whoever we get to play.
We failed. We've learned our lesson. We've got back in the building. We've worked. You know, it's kind of just that blue-collar way. It's Buffalo.
We're anxious and excited to go out there chomping at the bits to go get out on the field. We got the best tools to have a chance.
By no means does this feel like we've accomplished what we want to accomplish. The main goal is to win a Super Bowl.
All right, hour number two here on a Thursday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And joining us now from NBC Sports Boston, it's Patriots beat reporter Phil Perry joining us here. And Phil, thanks for giving us the time first and foremost. Let's jump right into this thing. I think the thing that stands out the most right now is the length of the Patriots injury report. And look, I'm well aware of the tactics here. They usually have 15 guys listed as questionable or limited participation every single week. I get it. But there are some real injury question marks here, it would seem. The most interesting of which are probably Kyle Duggar with the hand injury. From what we've seen, not practicing again today. Isaiah Wynn, their left tackle. I know they've had Noah Heron fill in for him for a couple of starts this year already, back earlier in the season. Maybe not as catastrophic a loss. What do you feel are the biggest concerns with regard to player availability? Because I know Jalen Mills is also on the COVID list.
Yeah, it's a mess right now for the Patriots, to put it quite frankly. It's just one of those deals where they've gotten to the end of the season and they are, in a lot of cases, limping to the finish line. So whether it's Kyle Duggar, who had to miss last week's game, he was limited in practice yesterday, but then he wasn't spotted at the start of practice today. He's dealing with a hand injury. Dont'a Hightower didn't play last week. He's been banged up for the last few weeks. Christian Barmore suffered a knee injury at the end of that Dolphins game. Matt Judon, guys, he really hasn't been the same guy since the Patriots were in Buffalo back in week 13. He hasn't had a sack or a quarterback hit since that game. I think he's dealing with something. He's not even on the injury report right now. So between those sort of name players, and then you mentioned Isaiah Wynn, it looks like they're going to be getting Justin Herron ready to play left tackle and Jalen Mills on the outside. They really don't have a serviceable third outside the numbers type of corner. You know, they lost Jonathan Jones, who is their slot guy, their primary slot guy early in the season. Obviously they traded Stephon Gilmore. Their depth there just is not very good at all. Juwan Williams would probably be the guy to replace Mills if he can't play, if he's still on COVID. I don't know if you guys remember this play from the game in Buffalo, but Juwan Williams played, I don't know, two, maybe three snaps defensively. The second snap he was in the game, somebody noticed on Buffalo's side, Josh Allen, Brian Daboll, maybe both, Stephon Diggs, and they threw a deep fade down the sideline to Diggs, hit him in the hands, it looked like, probably should have been caught for about a 40-yard touchdown. Patriots promptly pulled Williams off the field, and we haven't seen very much of him since. So it just gives you an indication of where they're at. They're not deep enough, in my opinion, to withstand all these injuries and beat a team like Buffalo on the road in the playoffs.
What are they going to expect of Mac Jones? I mean, they came up here to Buffalo and they won the game, asking him just really to show up. And
right.
And then in the second game, 14-32 is not good enough, but it's the playoffs. It's no holds barred. So do you think they bite the bullet and say, okay, Mac, here, we need you to do this and this and this? What do you think?
They don't want to do that, Steve. I can tell you that the formula for them all year has been pretty consistent, which is we need to run the ball well. We need to play outstanding defense, and we need our quarterback to not lose it for us. And that goes back to a saying that we've heard from Bill Belichick for years, which is, before you can win, you have to first learn how not to lose. And so that's really what they've asked of Mac Jones over the course of his rookie season. Just don't lose it for us, which unfortunately for them, he's done. It's not just on him, but he has been a significant part of why they've lost three of their last four here. I mean, you get two picks in Indianapolis. You just mentioned some of the numbers from the Buffalo game. I mean, they had a hell of a time trying to move the ball through the air on that day at Gillette Stadium, which was a pretty mild day for December in Foxborough. And then in Miami, I thought it was just a disastrous first half for Mac Jones. He throws a pick six, the first third down of the game. He fumbles just outside the red zone. I mean, he's taking points off the board for his team. He's putting them on the board for the other team. It's about as bad a performance as we've seen from him really all year. So he's not hurt, but he's kind of limping to the finish line here as well. So if they had their druthers, the Patriots did, they would have the same sort of game plan that they ran in Buffalo the first time around. Obviously, they're going to need him to throw it more than three times, but they are going to try to be run heavy in this one and hope that it can keep them afloat so that it maybe is just a play or two at the end of the game ends up deciding the thing. I think they have to just try to make sure this thing is close, guys, at the very end, because again, between the injuries, the way they're playing, that all the self-inflicted mistakes that they've had at the end of the season here, it's just not shaping up to be a great time to see a really good team like Buffalo right now.
Right. You know, and Damian Harris is one of the few guys that has consistently performed against this Bills team. He's consistently performed in the run game all season, it would seem, for them, not having seen every single game. But, hey, I had him on my fantasy team, and he did me pretty well this year with 15 touchdowns.
There you go. There you go.
But, you know, in any event, it would seem that he is arguably their most important player on offense in this game, because early fast starts have been a problem for New England as well. And if they can't get on the scoreboard early, you fall behind 10 points or more to this Buffalo team. It's right where they want you because they want you to throw the football because their pass defense is the best in the league.
Well, their pass defense is great. And on the other side, the Patriots just aren't dynamic enough, explosive enough through the air to make up big deficits in short periods of time. They've tried like hell to put out the fires that they have started offensively early in some of these games. And you watch, you know, the second half in Indianapolis, or even, you know, the end of the game in Miami, Mac Jones made some great throws down the field, accurate, on point. That's all well and good, but they don't have enough in the way of playmakers. And Mac Jones doesn't have enough experience right now to be able to string those kinds of plays together if you fall behind double digits. So Damian Harris is a really critical player for them. I thought the Patriots run game was the least of their issues when they played in that second matchup here at Gillette Stadium, because the Bills clearly wanted to take the run away. Patriots run numbers still ended up pretty good, yeah, even with eight guys in the box
right
quite often, but it was the score of that game that took the run game away for the Patriots. So they can't get into a situation like they did again against Buffalo, second matchup. What happened on that first drive? They run it into the line for nothing. Then they bring some pressure. They get a throwaway from Mac Jones. Now all of a sudden it's third long. That's where they want Mac Jones all day long, I would assume.
How will, for instance, the left tackle Isaiah Wynn being out, how much will that affect the run game and the health of the team overall affect, you know, Harris's ability to run?
I think it's impactful. I think it would be more impactful if this somehow became a passing game for them. To me, that's the biggest issue if Wynn's not out there. I think Justin Herron can give them something as a run blocker. He did play early in the season. The Patriots' run game wasn't as good as it was really in the middle of the season, but they were able to create some momentum on the ground, even with some backups in and out of the lineup through the first month of the season or so. It was when they had to pass protect that they had all kinds of issues. Mac Jones was on pace through the first four games of the season. He was on pace to set a record in terms of quarterback hits absorbed. You know, you go back last 20 years in the NFL and he was going to be the new high water mark in terms of that statistic that you don't want to be a part of if you're playing that position. And it was because they had guys like Yasir Durant and Justin Herron in the game. If they can keep it on the ground and it doesn't become one of these situations where they have to throw to come back, I think they'll be okay on the left side, but even if it's a run game, guys, you guys know it. It's a divisional game. Again, it's a playoff game. You're going to need the quarterback to make a play at some point. So if you've got a backup left tackle in there against the Bills pass rush that has been pretty good the last month of the season or so here, that's just not a great situation for them to be in.
Talking with NBC Sports Boston Patriots, Boston, NBC Sports Boston. I don't want to call them the Boston Patriots. That's what it was sounding like. Patriots beat reporter Phil Perry with us. And Phil,
people that watched football like back in the 60s would be all over that.
The last time these two teams met in the playoffs, right? Back in 63. I wanted to ask you about special teams because there have been some very uncharacteristic miscues by New England's special teams. And believe me, our punter had enough problems here last week where they're focused on that primarily here in Buffalo. But that usually doesn't happen for Patriots special teams. What's going on there? And I don't know if you guys even have access to special teams coach Cam Accord, but what's happening there?
It's hard to explain. It really is. And, you know, the two miscues this past week that extended drives for the Dolphins and led to points, one of them probably shouldn't have been called. Brandon Bolden got called for making a tackle with his helmet down. And the posture thing is certainly a thing that these officials are looking out for. That's one. The other was completely avoidable, which was Lawrence Guy was lined up on the center, which since 2013, I believe, is when the rule came into be. You can't do it. And everybody knows that. And I would assume, you know, the players have to know that even as well. Lawrence Guy's a veteran guy who's been on that unit before. So it's really these brain fart kind of moments on that, you know, in that phase that have really killed them. You know, block punt in Indianapolis. To me, the game was never the same after that moment. We know how critical those errors can be. So it's really, guys, it's just for them, it's unfortunately been a trend for them since that bye week, since they left Buffalo riding high, feeling themselves, I think feeling like they were the baddest team on the planet. They threw it three times and they beat a good team on the road. They ran it when they wanted to. They ran it when the entire stadium knew they were going to run it. They were feeling great. They got back from their bye and all of a sudden these mistakes start to crop up, whether it's the special teams errors or the penalties. It feels like they roll out of bed on game day and you can count on them for eight penalties, you know, just like that. And again, that's not a Bill Belichick style coached team that, you know, we're used to seeing here.
Yeah, you go back to their return guy. The Bills have been rotating return men to three different guys over the last month with Micah Hyde, Isaiah McKenzie, and Marquez Stevenson. Gunnar Olszewski has been your guy, the returner for the Patriots, from start to finish. How has he played, and has he, you know, been – has he been part of the problem? Oh, I don't think so. I mean, it seems like he's pretty steady back there, and they trust him a great deal.
He's pretty steady, though. I will say, Steve, he's gotten away with a few muffs that have not ended up hurting the Patriots. But, you know, we go back and we do our grades, and other places do similar things. You know, the special teams grade hasn't been good consistently, again, over the course of the last month, month and a half. And there are moments where he gets a little loose with the football. So that's just something you'd have to keep an eye out for. He's obviously – he's kind of a slight guy. But he runs like he's Adrian Peterson, like he wants to take on the world with every punt return. So he'll leave his feet on occasion. He doesn't always catch it totally cleanly. So, you know, even Gunnar Olszewski, he hasn't been the most sure-handed player back there. So it's really all facets of that kicking game that it feels like they're going to have to get shored up really quickly here to avoid a big-time error in a critical game.
Last one I've got for you, Phil, is there a theory as to why Judon's production has kind of fallen off the table here? Because I know he was on the COVID list for a while, wasn't he? Is there any theory as to maybe dealing with some lasting effects from that? Is that maybe the best theory we can come up with, or is there some other explanation there?
You know, I asked him about the COVID impact, and he, it felt like, was pretty honest in that the only impact he felt like it had on him was that he wasn't really able to work out. And so it did take him a few days to get his wind back in that regard. But he really didn't feel like he had much in the way of symptoms or after effects. The one thing that I would say, you know, would be a real indicator of how he's feeling is what happened at the end of the game in Buffalo. So there was a play late in that game where he sort of landed awkwardly, and he told us after that he hurt his ribs. He had to come out of the game briefly there, eventually made his way back in, and he really hasn't missed much time since then outside of the COVID list. But I think he's probably dealing with a rib issue, because to me, he looks like a player who just doesn't have the same kind of pop and explosion that he had for the vast majority of the season. He was probably their most valuable player either side of the ball, guys, for the first three quarters of the season. And for him to just disappear the way he has over the course of the last month has been a real surprise. So I don't know if that can get better between now and Saturday, but they need him to play really well, because if he doesn't, and he doesn't play disciplined, that's another thing that's kind of gone out the window with him, is when he doesn't play discipline, he flies up the field. It really opens up these rush lanes for, you know, Tua Tagovailoa killed them last week. Josh Allen, we know, is a much better athlete. That's one thing that I know this entire defense is really focused on. You can't let Josh Allen kill you with his legs. I know that's something they've been harping on all week here.
Phil, thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for taking some time. It's good talking to you again. We'll see you over the weekend.
Anytime, guys. Sounds good. Enjoy the game Saturday.
All right. That's NBC Sports Boston's Patriots beat reporter Phil Perry joining us here. Helped us out two times this year, so many thanks to him for giving us the 411 on the Patriots. Steve, you know, everybody's talking about the Bills punter, Matt Hock. Do you know that Patriots punters, three blocks this year? He said three punts blocked.
Really?
Yeah. Three.
Yeah, that's a crusher.
Wonder if Heath Farwell sees something on tape.
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody sees it. Can you get there?
Well, though? I mean, that's what I mean.
And the Bills blocked.
You see something, can we take advantage of it?
The Bills blocked a jet punt the other day. So that
Cam
was
Lewis did it
Cam
with his armpit.
Sometimes it happens like that. I mean, it's never easy, I'm telling you. So maybe both these teams are holding their breath when their punters go out there.
Yeah. And may make coaches think twice about putting the punter out there in the first place. Major, hell with it. We're just going to go for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. What do you think, Brownie? Because if I'm Sean McDermott in a game like this, depending on how everything's going with the rookie quarterback across the field, like when you're across midfield, is it four down territory all day?
Well, I think
I'm fourth and say fourth and three or less.
Yeah, I think we've seen Coach McDermott handle these situations all season long, and he has not gone strictly by whatever the statistical probabilities say. He's factored in, how is my defense playing? What's the score on the board? How much time is left in the game? He always weighs all those other things into that decision. I think if it's fourth and one or fourth and two, yes, they're going for it. Fourth and three, he has said himself, that's where it gets a little murky, depending on where you are on the field. And that's true, and the statistical probabilities bear that out.
We talked about the last meeting in Foxborough between the Bills and the Patriots. He went for it a ton.
Every time.
Except for one.
Yeah.
And he kicked the field goal on a fourth and two.
To go up 10-7.
They went up 10-7. And here's the thing. I didn't have a problem with it then, and here's why. Two plays before was when who got hurt? The guard.
Butker.
Yeah. Ike Butker got hurt two plays before that fourth down would have been. And they bring Deion Dawkins in. They slide Spencer Brown over. They move Bates in at
from
guard.
From right guard to left
from
guard.
Right guard to left guard. And then in comes.
Darrell Williams moved from right tackle to right guard.
So they shuffled the whole line.
Four guys moved.
Right, four guys moved two plays before that, and you're going to try and go for it on a critical fourth down. He said, you know what?
Let me just kick this.
Let's kick it. That's the only time he didn't go for it last time these two teams met.
And
now here's the thing. Every single drive except for the end of both halves, they were inside the 20.
Right.
So
moving the ball was not an issue.
They were moving the football.
I think he knew, let me take the points here. Let's reset the offensive line, get them settled in, and we're going to keep moving the ball.
That's the way I thought about it.
Yeah. Because it was very clear from the beginning of that game, the Bills had more juice than the Patriots did. You could just – I'm watching it through the television, and I could feel it. Like,
right.
They just had far more intensity down in and down out than the Patriots did in that game.
It used to be when I was playing, and not when I was playing so much, but when you watch games, you get an idea, like, in the first couple of minutes of a game, which team's sharp. By a good break or lucky break or a tackle or a play or something like that. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes that carries through all the way. And I think I get what you're saying about the juice the Bills brought to the table. And that, I think,
and you could argue the same thing for the Patriots in the first game.
Out here, yes, exactly. And I'll say this too. The Bills had every reason to have an enormous size chip on their shoulder from the way the game went here in Buffalo.
Yes,
and
just 3 weeks
prior.
They
were trying to win it left-handed almost, you know. You couldn't throw the football. And even this last game against the Jets, Eric Wood brought it up to us on Monday that 34 out of the 37 points scored this last game against the Jets
we're going towards the tunnel.
Yeah. The 37 total points, yeah.
Yeah, 34 of the 37 total points for both teams. So it was you get into this stadium, and it's hard to do that. You got to take that into account. And it'll be interesting to see which team has the wind and the lead, or one or the other, in the fourth quarter of this game coming up Saturday night.
Yeah, the only quarter this season in which the Patriots, who finished second in point differential to the Bills this year, the only quarter in which they've been outscored this season is the first quarter. They've been outscored in the first quarter 89-77. It's not a wide margin, but they've been outscored in the first quarter, and getting off to slow starts has put them in bad spots because then they usually have to put more on Mac Jones' plate, which is what they do not want to do. Meanwhile, the Bills have outscored their opponents in the first quarter 102-37.
Wow.
That is the key to this game.
It might be.
Get off to a fast start, media, put it on Mac Jones.
Even like Phil Perry, who we just had on, some of the other media people you hear talking about this Patriot team, Mac Jones has gotten off to slow starts. It doesn't look that way statistically, obviously, because they're not that slow because they're only down, 10 points over the whole course of the whole season. But of late, the Patriots have struggled to get out of the blocks fast, at least offensively.
We are asking you, following Saturday's Bills-Pats playoff game, what's your Sunday morning headline? It looks like Linda in North Boston has a headline for us. What do you have for us, Linda?
Oh, hi, and I'm so glad I got through. My headline is Bills Iceberg Sinks the Pats.
Okay. I like that. A little Titanic analogy. That's a clever one. I like it. You're going to take the cold weather into account as well. Well done, Linda. I like that one.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. We're going to move along here. That's pretty good. Not bad.
Yeah.
You know, you got to factor in the weather. That's got to be part of it. We're going to go to Dennis in Lewiston. He's got a headline. Let's see what Dennis has. Welcome to One Bills Live. Dennis, what do you got?
Go ahead. Hey, I just want to start by saying go Bills.
Sure.
Love the team, a big fan. Everybody here with me? Hey! We got to go. And the dog loves us too. Loves you too.
Okay, great.
But for my headline, I want to say Bills of the Iceberg, the Patriots of the Titanic. But I also got a couple questions.
Okay.
Mostly for Steve. No disrespect, Chris.
No, I get it.
But love you, Steve, man. You're my hero. I met you a few years ago at a party for Woody. You know, my most treasured picture is the two of us together. But I wanted to ask you if you thought anybody specific stuck out on special teams this year.
For the Bills. Right?
And I also want to know if Isaiah McKenzie's playing and what his favorite candy is.
Oh, boy.
And that's all I got.
I don't know if we can answer that one, but I'm not going to pretend to know Isaiah McKenzie's favorite candy, but anybody stand out on special teams this year for you, Steve?
There's a couple of them. Cam Lewis has had a really nice year.
Mm-hmm.
Medakevich is a stalwart out there. Saran Neal has really had
really
a nice
good.
Year. He's really had a nice year.
Like Pro Bowl consideration
right.
good.
He's had a really nice year. And so have Tyler Bass has been sensational. They got off to a slow start when they gave up a punt block in week one, but they've been really good after that. Hawk has been, I think one of the reasons Bass has had a great year is because of Matt Hawk and his ability to hold the ball. Don't discount that. Hawk's ability to get the ball down deep and pin teams inside the 20 has been good. His leg out in the field, not as good. Obviously, we saw the bad game list last week. But I will note this, too, and Sean McDermott did as well. He bounced back late in that game, and he punted it really well after a couple of bad – actually, two punts that really counted that were really horrible. He had three. The drop snap and then the 21-yarder that followed the 28-yarder that didn't count. So, yeah, it was a rough day for him. But special teams-wise, I like Heath Farwell. He's much better coordinator than he was 2 years ago. And I think this is a team with the guys that they've got on it now, with Tywan Jones back in the fold, Medakevich here, Saran Neal, and Cam Lewis. They got some guys. They've really got some guys. And you sprinkle in a couple other guys around them. So I like
Smith,
where they're at
yeah.
special teams-wise. But they've got to be aware. I think the thing that gets me, with Micah Hyde able to catch punts like he does is awesome. And McKenzie and Marquez, cool. I think they really need to have their antennae up for something Saturday from the Patriots. I think the Patriots need to do that kind of thing to keep this
game
close.
They're going to be a desperate team. They know they can't, especially with their injuries now. They're going to be even more shorthanded than they would have been with all their horses. And even then, I still don't think they match up man to man.
They're going to have at least one awareness play a quarter. You know what I'm saying? They're going to have one of those plays where it's a double pass or flea flicker or something like that, or
double returners,
or Mac Jones out of the backfield and a wildcat with Harrison and the other. So I think the Patriots are going to have to do that. I think they're going to really make a concerted effort, and this is not special teams or not, but special teams could be one of those awareness plays that I'm talking about.
Yep.
But I think they're going to make a concerted effort offensively, defensively, and special teams-wise to win the turnover battle at all costs. At all costs.
That's their best chance to win.
They have got to steal some possessions from Buffalo. If they can win the turnover battle by plus two, they got a chance.
Yeah. Break time for us here. Mike in Orchard Park. Others holding at 803-0550. Hang tight. We'll get to you. We'll take a break here and be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. We want to get right back to the phones and squeeze in Mike from Orchard Park. Mike, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
I got three quick questions.
Sure.
First one, have you guys shown the video of Beasley dunking on your program?
I don't believe so. You mean dunking a basketball?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like crazy dunking.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Anyway, here's my question. Steve, could you ever dunk a basketball?
Yes.
Two hands behind my head.
What?
Yeah.
Two hands behind my head.
So you could do pretty much any kind of dunk.
Yeah.
Not any kind, but two hands behind my head was probably my biggest accomplishment.
Steve had some hops.
Wow. All right. I always wondered that. Here's my other question. Aside from thunderstorms, hurricanes, tornadoes, is there any pattern of weather that could cancel a football game?
Lightning.
Yeah, lightning.
Lightning, that's thunderstorm to me. Like, can it be too cold?
No.
No. Well,
can't
no.
Be.
Can't, probably can't.
It cannot. They played the Ice Bowl in 56 below or something like that.
Well, with,
in Green
with the wind
Bay.
Chill, right.
So, yeah, they're not. And the NFL doesn't have weather stoppages or postponements. They have, unless it's a hurricane.
Right.
They've done that.
But even then, they
move the game and play it. So, yeah.
Because, I mean, Stephon Diggs even told us, because I had forgotten this, when they were building the new Minneapolis stadium, the Vikings had to play outside at the University of Minnesota for a year, and they had a playoff game. It was minus 15. That's without the wind.
Maybe it's cold.
They played outside in minus 15.
It's dangerous cold.
Yeah.
Yes.
Didn't stop the game.
Yes.
We want to pass along some comments to you from head coach Sean McDermott, who addressed the media today, as well as some of the players, about the upcoming game, naturally. And Coach McDermott talked about preparing his team for the cold weather, and there are some interesting steps that they have taken to do that. Here is Coach on that subject.
I believe in getting out where you're going to play the game is to be in that environment as much as you can, all the while not trying to put too much physiological stress on the players too early in the week, you know, and trying to balance that as well. So I think we've done a good job of tearing it into Saturday at this point. You know, we talk about it as a staff, and so those guys, you know, tried to cool those balls down a little bit. And, you know, as you know, even growing up, when you're playing in the backyard and it's cold, I'm sure in Buffalo, right, for a lot of people out there, that's the case this time of year, trying to go out there and just play touch football or tackle or whatever. And the ball gets slick because it is so firm, right? And so just trying to make sure, just like anything, that we try to adapt our guys to that as much as possible.
So basically, Coach told us today would be their first completely outdoor practice of the week. It was in the stadium. Yesterday, they were in the field house, but they had all the doors open and they turned the heat off. So
right, it's like practicing in a tent.
Right, and it was windy yesterday, and I think when wind enters the equation, you don't want it to compromise the work you need to get done to prepare for the game, especially if windy conditions are not expected on game day. And that is the case. It is supposed to be relatively calm by Orchard Park standards for the game Saturday night, even though it will be bitterly cold. But they're freezing the footballs, Steve, for practice.
Think about it. And after the game here in Orchard Park when they played the Patriots, the post-game comments by Bill Belichick, he went into his team and they do their
post-game. Yeah, I remember this.
He said, he goes, guys, that's why we practice in this stuff.
Yeah.
And they were all like, they're like, but yeah, that's the idea. You got to get used to it, and there are no questions in your mind about what has to happen and what it's going to be like when you go out there. Certainly, you may make mistakes, and the cold may be a factor, but at least it's not a surprise, and you know how to handle it. And if you don't execute how to handle it, that's one thing. But it's just something you need to know how to do. You need to be used to it. You need to have gone through it once or twice. That's why it is a thing when quarterbacks like Mac Jones have never played in cold weather, and the guys who have never played in the rain, and guys who have never played in the wind. It is something you need to think about and get used to. And if you can practice in it, all the better.
Deion Dawkins, who has been here for the whole run of Coach McDermott's tenure, basically was asked about what it means to him to be back in the playoffs. Obviously, he was here for the playoff loss in Houston. He was here for their season ending last year, obviously, in Kansas City. So here is Deion on his thoughts about being back in postseason.
We're one of few to be in a position. You know, like we look on our social medias and we see some of the guys that are already home and back, like where they're full-time like residency is, and we take pride in it that we're still going and that we're still practicing and that we still have meetings and we still are in the flow and we take it serious. The postseason is special. It's a special thing to and get to, and everybody can't say that they've gotten there. Playing with like Kyle Williams, the first year that he's been there was after that Dolphins game, with the blessing of Dalton, and he's been in the league for 12, 13 years, like maybe even more, like I don't know. So we just take it with a lot of pride. It's not easy to get here, and we don't take it lightly.
And a lot of the players, a lot of the veteran players have told some of the younger players, hey, it doesn't happen every year. So make sure you're doing your job this week so we can keep playing.
Yeah, you've got like 40 members of the Bills on the active roster have appeared in at least one playoff game. 38 players of the Bills roster have appeared in multiple playoff games. Micah Hyde and Emmanuel Sanders lead them with 13 playoff games. Yeah. Of course, they were with other teams and all of that. Now McDermott, Leslie Frazier, Brian Daboll, Heath Farwell, all of those guys, all the coordinators and the head coach have all played, have all coached in or even played and coached in Super Bowls themselves. So there's a lot of experience and a lot of realization. As much as there, and it's as much as big a numbers as those are, like all these guys have played, it doesn't happen that often. It's an opportunity, and they don't take it lightly. You know how I think it's more precious because all of these guys like me and others of these guys know how it ends. Particularly the 38 members of the Bills or 40 members of the Bills who were with the team last year, who saw it end so all too quickly.
Yeah. Only one team is going to be happy at the end of the year.
That's right.
Only one. Jordan Poyer, as it pertains to this game against the Patriots specifically, knows defending the Patriots' run game will be important. They had trouble stopping it, obviously, in the first matchup. The Patriots were even productive in the second matchup. They just had to throw it more because they fell behind. So here is Poyer on defending the Patriots' run game more effectively.
Very, very diverse, and they got extremely good running backs. They got good contact balance, run the ball extremely hard, and they got a very solid offensive line that blocks well for them. And so they're able to turn the dial. One run's not working, they mix it up and go to the next run. So, we're going to have to play well and execute to win.
No secret there. And what I would say this, Steve, the prevailing response in the games where the Bills have not defended the run well from both Leslie Frazier and his players has been gap integrity and poor tackling. So those two things, which I think we could safely say are fundamental principles of good defensive football, have to be there. Because if they're not, you're going to have a big problem, and you're going to only encourage the Patriots to keep running the ball.
Yeah, I think we've been talking about it as well too early in the week about the more physical team will win.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to say, well, the team that runs the ball better or stops the run better is going to be the more physical team. Not exactly case. Some of that physicality has to do with just the attitude you're playing with. Certainly you can't miss tackles, and certainly you can't lose gap control and the integrity of the defense when you're playing. But I think there's something more in there that we've alluded to in a number of occasions. If you're not going to execute the game plan and, like, miss tackles and not get into the right gap, you're going to lose. For the most part, both these teams are very good at it. Their statistical rankings will tell you that. But this game's going to come down to something else, I think. Something that's going to be different. Certainly, if both teams execute at a high level, it will be a close game, and it should be. But we've talked about it a thousand times, Brownie. There's something about football that makes it different than any other sport, in that you've got to have a mindset of aggression and hostility and attack and all of that stuff that, like, you're going into a fight. And you got to have it collectively. You got to get like 53 guys on that vibe.
And that's what, right? Josh did before the second game.
That's
he
right.
walks into the locker room. He goes, "Gentlemen, I woke up this morning with violence on my mind."
You
and that's what's got to be brought collectively, as you said.
Yeah. But the Patriots know that. The Bills know that.
Who's going to bring it?
You got to get there. You got to get there somehow mentally.
Who's going to bring it? That's the question. All right, we have to take a break here. But when we come back, we'll get to some of your headline submissions for Sunday morning's headline after the Saturday night game between the Bills and Patriots. We'll get to your creativity next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, following Saturday's Bills-Pats playoff game, what's your Sunday morning headline? We go to the tweet sheet for answers, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. Jack starts us off. Frozen fans witness resilient Bills defeat Patriots. That's a little lengthy. Good luck fitting that on one line there in the paper. But, you know, I predicted a hard-fought game and a spirited effort by our beloved Bills, similar to the game in Foxborough. I think Singletary will play a huge role, both rushing and receiving. Sanders and Beasley will make their presence felt. Dean says, frostbit Patriots cracked like thin ice. Ooh, that's pretty good.
Look at him.
Bills and the cold temperatures freeze Patriots' Super Bowl hopes, and the Bills defeat them 34-17. Bills Mafia of Kazakhstan has weighed in, Steve. You ready for this one?
God, it's so fun.
These translations are great.
Know,
if you've never been to the
great
Twitter handle of Bills Mafia of Kazakhstan, I will try to do my best Kazakhstani accent. Mighty grizzly bear Josh Allen crushes hopeless and pitiful Patriots with his little finger.
That's good stuff.
Bob,
the Twitter handle
Bills Mafia
from Kazakhstan is a keeper.
It is pretty good. Is another of the many reasons why the internet is undefeated. Bob says, Bills serve a helping of revenge to Patriots ice cold. And Mark, again, playing off the cold forecast, bitter cold, Bills befuddle, bobbling Belichick. I want to go with bumbling Belichick. That would be even better if he has a couple of coaching errors, although he never seems to have any.
He never has a coaching error.
Big show tomorrow, as we usually do on Friday. We've got one Greg Cosell joining us, as he does every Friday. And who else do we have, Jay? That's right. We have Charles Davis, who's doing the game with Iron Eagle on CBS. So CD will be in to break down the game. We'll see you on Friday at 1:00.